walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on. I say walk on, I'm gonna keep on walking till I find my way back home.
The Podokan Center for Contemplative Walking is breaking new trails in the exploration of walking as a contemplative activity. Our Walk On podcasts introduce the people who are leading this exploration and the people who are doing contemplative walking themselves. Welcome to our two-part Walk On series with Dr. Alan Sears, a distinguished sociology professor from Ryerson University. In these talks, he reflects on the past two centuries and the relationship between walking and social activist movements in North America and Europe. He touches on urban design, the work of Walter Benjamin, the Situationist movement, and the ways that walking activism restores bonds of action. Alan Sears is a professor of sociology and interim chair at Ryerson University in Toronto. He specializes in social change, inequality, and ways of knowing. He's the author of The Next New Left, A History of the Future, and has co-authored numerous other publications. Alan is an active walker who has walked all over North America and Western Europe. In this first part, Dr. Sears describes the two ways he tends to walk and how they differ. If you haven't already, listen to our other interview with Dr. Sears and our other Walk On podcasts. And don't forget to check out our website, our two Tumblr galleries, These Boots Are Made for Contemplative Walking and Walking with Jesus.
So my name is Alan Sears and I teach sociology at Ryerson University in Toronto.
What's your primary focus in sociology? What are the kind of issues that you like to deal with?
Right now, the major thing I'm working on is looking at sexualities and changes over the last 50 years and what the future of sexualities looks like, relating that to speculative fiction and ideas of how our bodies feature in our ideas of sex. But I've also written about kind of political sociology and social movements, education and work.
And I know for sure that you're an active walker. What are the summer favorite walks that you've done?
You know, I've kind of got two kinds of walking in my life. One of them is very urban routine and day-to-day, and that is, among other things, a walk to work that's roughly an hour through Toronto. And I find pleasures of urban walking are the particular sights that you see, but especially the people watching and the intensity of the human population. But I also love hiking in kind of Bruce Trail and rural settings. This past summer, we did hiking in Scotland, and I think actually some of the best hikes that I ever did were some of those hikes in Scotland, because okay. It was just such a combination of terrains and just the most incredible vistas. It was perfect walking temperature, a bit wet at times, but perfect walking temperature. So I kind of have a mixture of urban and rural walking, and they kind of do different things for me.
We're developing a survey, and you've seen the questions, and one of the questions we ask is, how much does walking fit into your travel plans? Is that something that you kind of set aside and say, we want to go here because this is great walking?
Yes, that's definitely been, it's not every vacation that we've taken, but especially we've two other friends who are also enthusiastic walkers. We have done a number of vacations now, planned specifically around areas that have good walking. And it's often, that's one of the factors, because we also look for interesting cultural settings, but definitely places where we're going to have opportunities for some good hikes are one of our priorities on the vacation.
And you mentioned that you are doing daily walks or your workday walks through downtown in Toronto. How do you find that you use that? What do you find that you tend to do? Is it simply watching what's going on in the scene, or are you problem solving? Are you doing reflective work?
It really varies a lot. And so I often will walk with a podcast on, and that can vary anything from news and more topical current affairs, analytical, to fiction. Sometimes it's music, and sometimes I don't have anything. And what's going on in my mind varies So there's times when I'm listening very intently to whatever it is that I've got on. But a lot of times I'm solving problems, especially in my writing. Mm-hmm. I try to use that. It is a time when I figure out ideas. And so, for example, the writing project that I'm working on right now on sexualities exceeds my grasp. I've been reading things that fit together in very complex ways. And I find one of the times that I'm most creative at putting those things together is when I'm walking. Mm-hmm. So there's days when I will walk in and spend the time on a particular issue that I'm working on. There's other days where it really is largely about calming myself if I'm feeling anxiety about the day or whatever. And that it doesn't mean that I necessarily concentrate as such on calming myself, but I will tend to put on a podcast that's somewhat distracting, maybe humorous and so on. I find at the end of the walk I feel less tense than at the beginning. If I'm working on an article, because I also do shorter articles, I often will figure out the major argument of the article as I'm walking. So I did one recently on the relationship between the politics of free speech and the politics of equity, and the major line for that, I knew a little bit what I wanted to argue, but it was a couple walks that I kind of figured out the main points that I was going to make. So it varies a lot, but it's definitely a quality thinking time. It's emotional shifting of gears time, and sometimes it's just a time for thinking, passing time, doing those kinds of things.
The city walking, the walking to work kind of stuff, can be this very creative and reflective kind of stuff. Is that different when you're on vacation? Do you find you do that same sort of contemplative walking when you're on vacation?
I think it's even more so because on vacation I would never have music or podcasts.
Okay.
It's all about the sounds, the sights, the smells. And so I'm much more attentive to where I am when I'm doing that. I'm walking with friends, and so there's often some conversation, but there's a lot of just looking. And so I find that there's fairly similar thought patterns. Again, luckily, in some ways on vacation, the day-to-day stuff is a little less there, so there's a little less time trying to avoid thinking about something I don't want to do at work or whatever. Mm-hmm. But certainly the creative aspects are there, and I just find ideas come. Well, I'll give one example is that we did a hike this summer when we were in Scotland down a river that had mills from the 18th and 19th centuries. Mm-hmm. That were water powered. Beautiful walk in these beautiful old mills, a little bit like this area in some ways, but more intense. I began thinking about the relationship between water power, human bodies, machines, and I knew I had a book on the shelf that I hadn't read yet that talks about some of that. And so through the rest of that walk, which then went away from the mills into highland country that was not industrial in any way, I was thinking about issues of where human industrial power, whatever you call it, mechanical power, exceeded the natural forces of flowing water, bodies, mm-hmm. horses, and so on. And so something like that can trigger thoughts that connect back to my work, but also connect to the ecosystem that I'm in and what I'm seeing and smelling and hearing.
It's interesting to tie that with that, because we've talked before about how the changes, the industrialization in Europe also parallels the shift away from a walking society and the relationship between people walking and some of the political activities is how, as cities became more and more industrialized and more structured around wheeled transport and so on, how the reaction to that was dominated by people who were walking. And we've talked about some of the labor movements of the late 19th century and into the middle of the 20th century French liberation movements. Do you want to talk a little bit about how your understanding as a sociologist gives some shape to that?
It's not stuff that I've thought about systematically, mm-hmm. but it's interesting just thinking of the history of cities like New York or Toronto or whatever. It's really only as mass transit and then the car came that those stopped being places of walking culture. That historically, so it wasn't simply urbanization or even early industrialization, because through the period of early industrialization, workers still walked to work, and walking was still intercity, people would use trains. but it wasn't until mass transit. And if you think of it, what comes with that is a tighter idea of time and an intensification of time use because of the way that work is organized. And then organizing life around work and school intensifies. And so the idea that the transportation is a null time and a time to be obliterated as much as possible certainly fits with the wheeled transit. The fact that as you're packed onto a subway train, you're in a car of strangers, and especially once you're driving, definitely the people are strangers outside of your car, as opposed to walking where there is a kind of a face-to-faceness. And so the early, when you read histories, for example, of the Lower East Side in New York City, you know that there was a lot of face-to-face interaction on the street. Mm-hmm. Vendors, people walking, children playing, and that as walking culture has receded, so has the idea that the other people you bump into are fellow people that you have something in common with or some exchange with, some interchange. And instead, the idea that you are among strangers who may at times be threatening and so on. And I think the decline of walking and the creation of others as strangers, it's not the only factor, but I think it's one of the factors. And certainly social movements, because the power that they are trying to unleash is a power of bringing people together in new ways. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the power that people from below have is a power that's largely about collecting the people who are otherwise cast apart and fragmented. And once they begin to form a force together, they actually are a social force that has considerable power, can stop workplaces from running, can shut cities down, can do a whole bunch of things like that. And that collectivity that happens through walking is recreated through demonstrations. In England, for example, there's a whole history of going back a long, long time, but certainly in the 1930s, there was a very famous march in the Great Depression that was against hunger and the way that people are. And then there was a big march, intercity march. It's a multi-city intercity march in the late 50s against nuclear arms. Yes. In Britain. And then in the, can't remember when in the 70s, but against unemployment. So these themes being marked by a march between cities that ends up in a big march in London or the capital. And it's interesting to think why marching, and it's that a lot of the idea of a march is about that sense of collectivity that happens and the face-to-face connections, the sense of the magnification of yourself that happens when you are with others. And so to me, that's a central part of movements. I've been in a city like Toronto when hundreds of thousands of people are marching, and the way that that changes the feel of the city, the feel of who you are. It also turns upside down the day-to-day operation of the city when the streets that were designed now for cars become places that people have taken over. The scale, the pace, everything begins to change. And it's why, like in Europe, where a lot of cities now have pedestrianized areas that were redeveloped, they were originally pedestrian, then they became auto, and now they've re-pedestrianized them. The feel in those places is so different.
And it seems to have happened in cities all over North America and Europe for hundreds of years. I was watching a series on the early stages of the Russian Revolution. And again, it was masses of people gathering in cities. And the same thing in Italy with Mussolini. The same thing in Berlin with Hitler. That there was people coming into the street, and political life took form by people moving and collecting.
And can I say a little bit about the contrast between the two, least arguably? I'll say that this came out of, this idea came out of originally a cinema class that I took in the 1970s in Quebec. The professor contrasted films made by a Soviet filmmaker named Eisenstein, who tried to recreate that sense of proud that was there in the Russian Revolution, and contrasted that with the very famous films by Leni Riefenstahl about the Hitler rallies in Germany. One is extreme order, where the mass is extremely, in the fascist rallies, are extremely controlled, and where there's not a hubbub among people, and there's not open discussion because there's actually a huge sense of risk if you dissent in any way. It's about conformity. Whereas the Eisenstein films, the crowd is coming from different places, in some ways going to different places, but also converging. there's never that kind of uniformity. And I think there's something real about that. When you read people's stories, contemporary stories from cities in Russia during the revolution, and the same thing is true in Egypt, stories from Tahrir Square, and when you read from Turkey, Gezi Park recently, the Occupy movement, there's this hubbub of humanity and people talking to each other, people talking to people they wouldn't have talked about otherwise. An incredible cultural interchange that's going on, and people debating things on street corners and coming across strangers who they wouldn't have talked to in the past and arguing with them in various ways. Whereas in the fascist forms, that kind of hubbub isn't there. It's much more controlled from above and much more regimented. And so even the same activity can have very different meanings, even if they're shades of the same meaning. And the distinction for me, at least, is fairly important between that idea of from belowness, where people themselves are feeling that they are taking over, and the feeling of being on command in an almost military way of force.
You've been listening to another Walk On podcast presented by the Podokan Center for Contemplative Walking. Check out our growing library of videos and podcasts, enjoy our Tumblr photo essays, and visit our Facebook page. All those links can be found on our website at podokan.com. If you have a walking story to share, let us know. We'd love to hear about your experience. I'm Enan Ray Parcello. Thanks for listening, and walk on.